This is still July 27th. I think this is the 10th tape, resuming from the 9th one. Mm-hmm. Just had a momentary interruption here. And Marwan, you had been talking about one-month stay at Mehrazad in 1956, shortly before Baba's second visit in the 1950s to the West, a time of frantic preparation and activity prior to that trip.
Yeah. So, while we were here, I remember one day, this hall was not in use at that time. It was almost like a stable or something. Mm. So the side rooms is where Baba would come and sit or meet with people whenever they... one of the side rooms. So I remember Baba's... We were with Baba, and Baba tells Erich, take down what this message I want to dictate. And that was the day he gave out this message: a great personal disaster is awaiting me, and it will test the love and faith of my lovers to the limit and all that. So if you'll see in the records, you'll find one circular issued in 1956, just before Baba left for the West, one of the life circulars. Yeah, and in which he gives this pre-intimation of a disaster that was to befall him later in the year. So
I do remember that.
You know it. So we took Erich took down that message. And then it was all read out to him, duly edited and all that, and then given out as a circular. Mm. Yeah.
How would you respond to hearing something like that?
Nothing in particular. We just took it as a statement from Baba, and that was it, yeah. So I don't recollect any special feeling about it, but just... whatever Baba said, well, so we be prepared for it. Yeah. So, and another thing was, Baba brought a novel for me. Not exactly a novel. It was a true-to-life description of a man called Heyerdahl or something, who was discovering how the Polynesians traveled from Central America to the Pacific Islands without any mode of modern shipping and all that in those ancient times. How did this tribe migrate to these islands thousands of miles away? Working on the historical facts available, he did exactly as those tribes would do at that time, and build a sort of raft.
The Kon-Tiki.
Yes, the Kon-Tiki.
Right.
You read that?
I did read that when I was a boy.
Yeah. So Baba says this is a very interesting book, and you read it. So. In the midst of all these things, I had to read the book also. So every day he would come, how far you've come in this reading of the book. And I would say, Baba, I'm halfway through. So hurry up, then there won't be much time left. Mm-hmm. And
was this part of your cure, part of your rest cure?
Yeah, part of that only, I suppose. But he took great interest in... He would ask me, how do you like it? And I said, Baba, I'm really enjoying it, so I want to read it slowly.
Savor
it. And he says, yeah, I told you it's nice, you'll like it. And it was really a wonderful book. And how he built this raft. And he had a mind to tie them with metal wire. I remember this one particular passage, and he says that he had tied the raft with metal wires, and then he said, this is going against that because there was no metal at that time. So he unwound the whole thing and he bound the logs with these vines, you know, in the jungle that grow. And when he was out in the Pacific, and when he was buffeted with the waves, and he realized that had he tied it with wires, it would have cut through the logs, and he would have drowned.
Wow.
So it was fortunate for him to stick to the old methods,
yeah,
which saved his life. So all these details were there, and very interesting little details.
Remember
in the book.
Of balsa wood, isn't
it? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting book, and Baba was taking quite a great deal of interest in it.
So someone must have read the book to Baba.
Yeah, Mani probably, yeah. And he made me read that book. So these are little highlights of that stay at Mehrazad. And Baba would be around. Yeah, another thing I remember was that Chagan would be called for night watch. So Chagan Master was one of the old Baba Mandli, and he was having a practice of Ayurvedic practice in his house at Bingar near Ahmednagar. So every day he would finish his work there and then come over to Mehrazad. And the initial time was 7 o'clock in the evening. He had to start the night watch and carry it through till the end of the night.
Wow.
So yeah.
And that must have been, and he worked
in the work during the day. He had this big practice, and in the night he had to keep awake and keep night watch.
When would he sleep?
Early in the morning, when he would be released, he would go there and probably rest for 2 or 3 hours and then be ready for his practice again. One of the early rugged Mandli, you know. So I remember Baba, before retiring, he would tell me, when Chagan comes, tell him today he should be there by 6:30. So from 7 it became 6:30. Then few days, tell him he should be there by 6. So he would keep increasing the time, you know, of duty. And I had to tell Chagan to be ready. Baba's called you at this time. So he would keep a night watch.
Did he look exhausted?
Well, he did look tired at the end of the whole thing.
I would think so.
But it was fortunately a short stay of a month, so probably he could carry through it. Of course, Baba gave him the strength to do it inwardly.
I've always thought that particular thing would be hard. I can imagine fasting or various other difficulties, but
yeah,
going without sleep,
yeah,
I can't imagine.
So, Iraj, used to tell us in a very humorous way that, can you tell me which is the most difficult weight to lift in the world? So we wouldn't know what to guess. And he says, your eyelids. When you feel sleepy and you have to lift your eyelid, try lifting it and see how difficult it is. So yes, one of the most difficult things to do is to keep awake. Because to fall into sleep is one of the most compelling things when you are tired, especially.
Were you ever given the job of night watch?
No, I wasn't. In fact, Iraj suggested once to Baba, there was some shortage of people. Baba says, no, I have to tell him everything. It will be a job for me. Don't bother him, let him be. So that was as close as I could get. So no night watch for me. But it was a tough thing, there was no question about it.
Yeah.
Because in the later years, it would be just... of course, in the early days, the night watchman had to stay outside the room but later on it would be inside the room and pressing Baba's feet, but not to move, not to make the slightest noise, and sit very still. Even if you did this, Baba would wake up. Why did you move? So this is how the watchman would tell us. Mm-hmm. So it must have been a real sort of, you know, what they call tapas. Yes. Yeah. What is that called?
Austerity.
Austerity. Yeah. No austerity could compare to this,
yeah.
Where you had to do nothing but to keep awake, yeah. Despite all this.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah. And how to keep awake without activity.
Right.
So, and the most important part was to keep awake. Yeah. So these are the things that Baba makes his people do, you know.
Yeah, Baba never gave formal austerity in the yogic sense.
Never.
But these sorts of things were harder.
Far beyond what any yogi would ever attempt to do.
Yeah.
I remember very beautiful sunsets then, because Mehrazad was very open then. There were no huts or anything around, not many trees, so vast open spaces, and there wasn't much pollution around in the atmosphere. So we would have very clear days and nights, and I remember beautiful sunsets, and I was admiring one of these sunsets, and Baba happened to pass by, and he stopped and says, "What a beautiful sunset."
Mm-hmm.
He's watching his own sunset.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, these were good times that I had with Baba during that stay.
How was Baba's health then?
He was nice, yes. And he was eating well. He would go for walks, and I remember I would accompany Baba on this private road, you know.
Mm.
That reminds me.
Mm.
So, I would accompany him alone, and Baba would walk at an amazing pace. This is after the first accident, mind you.
Mm.
And I would have to almost run to keep pace with him.
Yeah.
And would go to the end of the road, and then we would return. So then Baba says, "I feel quite sweaty after this walk."
Right.
I said, "Baba, but you walked so fast." He says, "You don't know how fast I would walk in the early days. This is nothing compared to that." So what could that be then? Yeah.
Were you able to read his gestures? I mean, some of the gestures sound like they were self-evident.
Not much, because I remember on the way back, he stopped where Gyara's little house is on the roadside, and he says, "Look that." So I said, "Baba, Kasti." So Baba said, "No." So I couldn't follow what he was saying. Then he said, "All right, don't worry." Then he came here and then told Iraj to tell what it was. And he said, "It's Gyara's house that Baba was pointing, the Parsi gentleman who stays there."
Uh-huh.
This is the sign of a Parsi who wears a kasti. So I couldn't make out what Baba was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was quite new to Baba's gestures.
Yeah.
And Baba had left the board, mind you.
Right.
Yeah. In 56, no board. So Baba was going to the West for the first time without the use of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that must have been, I mean, I think about, you know, Kitty and Elizabeth and others who have been accustomed to Baba with the board.
Yeah.
That might have been occasion for some worry, I should think. How to present Baba to the public if he's not dictating in the old way.
But Baba's gestures were so eloquent, and Neeraj had been quite adept by then.
Mm.
So I remember that first message that Baba was to give. something about being an atheist or a believer.
Mm.
Even if you are an atheist, if you believe in your own self, that is believing in God.
Right.
Some such message was there.
I remember that one.
And this was rehearsed by Baba in Vitheraj, because this was to be a television item.
Oh.
in the States. So how would Baba give it out? So all the signs Baba would make and repeatedly make Eretz learn the message, as it were.
Oh, so Baba actually rehearsed that
yeah,
with Eretz.
Yeah. Because it was to be a formal television program, you know. So this was going on here. The little backstage things.
Right, yeah.
Even, you know, after giving up the board, Don Stevens wanted to give out to the West how Baba used to use the board.
Mm.
And it was not properly shown before. I think this Paramount film was not out yet then, which we see Baba pointing.
Right.
It was not there, so nobody knew. And perhaps Don Stevens said, "Baba, the world will never know how you use the board, so could you make an exception?" So then Baba said, "Okay, I will do it once for this." So first Baba gave out the whole message in gestures. That was then, it was written out. And then that was the message he gave out on the board again, after giving it out through gestures.
Is this film
it was
somewhere?
Yeah, you might see it in Don's film, taken at Mehrabad in 1954, I think.
Oh, well,
during
sure
the
Peter
three incredible weeks. Yeah. Huh. So this was rehearsed first, the message, by gestures, so that not to use the board.
Uh-huh.
And then the board was just formally used to show on the film how Baba was using the board. So he would, as it were, do all these little rehearsals also.
I had often wondered when Baba would go on these various tours and would have messages that he would give on them, when those were prepared. So in this case, at least, they were prepared in advance.
Some of them, yeah.
Some
would be extemporary. Yeah.
Yeah.
On spur of the moment. Yeah.
Mm.
I wonder if I told you about Bera Mangla Baba doing the ground digging in Bangalore.
You had said something
yeah.
about that.
So that also was rehearsed, how Baba would do the ground digging, how they would go in a procession.
Uh-huh.
And it was rehearsed several times. Mama tells me this.
Before the actual location. Was Baba part of these rehearsals? Or?
Baba would take part, yes, because he had to do the ground digging, you know. So he would do all these rehearsals. Yeah. So just like ordinary people
right.
before.
And practice
yeah. yeah. So he would do all these things.
I had never heard this about this kind of thing before, although I had always
yeah.
assumed that some of that must have happened because
yeah.
it's only natural.
Yeah. So this Life at Its Best was not a sort of booklet then.
Yeah.
These messages were given out at different times during his Western tour, and later it was made into a book.
I see.
And one of the messages was Life at Its Best.
Yeah.
Life is a jest and a zest. And
on the
yeah.
path, life is a test.
Yeah. And so the title, Life at Its Best.
Yeah.
Then it was made into a book by the Sufism people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So these messages were given out first.
With Baba, during this month that you were here, I mean, sometimes we hear stories where Baba would seem to be, like, worrying. That is, what will happen here? What will you know, what will so-and-so say? Will they like this? Will they like that? As a way of, who knows what Baba would do through that kind of thing. stirring up people, but would Baba, was he talking about the upcoming visit to the West in that kind of way that you can recall? What should we do here? What should we do there? What will, so, you know, who will be sort of bringing up questions about what would be happening?
I don't think so, but sometimes he would exhibit a sort of nervousness. How would I be able to face? My health is not good.
Uh-huh.
How will I be able to do it? These things would be there.
Yeah.
He, and we would have to reassure him,
yeah.
Baba, you would be fine. you look nice. Whenever the programs are there, you automatically become very good looking. No, but my health is really bad. I may not be able to give off my best. How will it be, supposing that happens? He would do all these things, you know. But he would actually not act it out, but as it were, live through that sort of thing. Yeah. Because he was fully human, you know. So, as would any normal person have these little butterflies in the stomach, he would exhibit these signs, you know. But of course, when the time came, it was divinity in action, as it were.
Yeah. The films of Baba and Darshan, there's not a trace of any of that.
Yeah.
Not a trace.
No. See how spontaneous all his actions are, and how graceful and how beautiful he would look.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I think I mentioned he was sitting here in the later years, not in good health, and looked very haggard and lean. And somebody came for darshan. I think I mentioned that before. And Baba says, why this man has come? He's breaking my orders. Let him in, let him in. And before, and as soon as he sent this word, then we could see his face changing, you know, and the color coming into his cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
And a transformation taking place right in front of us. And as the man stepped in, Baba was so radiant and glorious. A totally different picture to the man who came and had his darshan. Right in front of our eyes.
Wow.
In a matter of minutes.
I see. So just before he came in, this transformation.
Yeah, before that man, he had to do this. So it was a sort of a disturbance to him, you know,
to have to
give this appearance to the person who has to come.
Yeah.
Because he has to carry that impression for the rest of his life, probably. We don't know what it must be. So what effort he has to undergo.
Yeah.
And therefore, he never liked disturbance in his seclusion. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with the rest of us, he would let us suffer in the sight of his suffering, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
It must have been a relaxation for him to be among those with whom he didn't have to put on.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. That's right.
Who wouldn't be shocked by it?
Yeah, those who would get used to this, this exhibition of suffering, you know, where you wouldn't have to hide it from any of us. Yeah. And major part of his life was that only. As he said, the avatar, no sooner he takes the mission of avatarhood, he starts to suffer.
Mm.
He has to just take on the suffering which the world has to undergo due to its karma. And if he wouldn't take that suffering on himself, the world would be just drowned in suffering. So he takes it upon himself. And we used to see that, yeah. That was the major part of his life was that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this happy stay was there for a month, and as every good thing has to have an end, I remember while I was undergoing this hectic work in my insurance company, I had this little mental breakdown. So I would get these sort of peculiar sensations in the head, you know, because of constant worry about preparing these policies in time, because it was a touch and go affair at that time. So all these policies had to be sent out to people all over the state, and there was a lot of tension, so much so that I couldn't even sleep well for several months. And it eventually affected my nerves, and I used to get peculiar sorts of episodes of noises in the head, and suddenly I would become a little disoriented, you know, because of the intense pressure of work at that time. So that's why then I was called here to have this relaxation, and Baba would keep telling me, "You're overworking. What is this? And you have come here for relaxation." And we had these messages to be typed out, and they would be read to Mani. Mani would edit them, and they would come back for retyping, and on it was going on. And so one of these times I was typing, and Baba came in, and Baba says, "Again you're typing." And just then I had this episode again.
Oh.
And I couldn't respond to Baba. And Baba says, "What's wrong with you?" And after a few minutes, I said, "Baba, I just had this little wheezing sound in the head and this peculiar sensation. I just blanked out a bit." So he says, "Yes, I could see that. Good, it happened in front of me." Then he says, "Call Gustadji." So I asked Gustadji to come in.
Gustadji?
Yeah. So Baba says, "Now put your hand on his head and bless him so that he won't get, he won't have the recurrence of this attack again." So Gustadji puts his hand on my head, and Baba says, now you won't be bothered again by this." And sure enough, after that, I never had these dizzy spells, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Who knows what Baba spared you?
Yeah.
That.
So I think it was the reward for all the hard work I was putting in. So this was one of the things that happened then.
Gustadji died not long after that, isn't that true? This would have been 56.
I think so, yeah. What, he died in 58 or 56? I think
I don't remember which year, but it was the
1 or 2 years, probably around about that time. Mm-hmm. But at that time, he was good.
Yeah.
Another funny thing with Gustadji happened. You know, when he went to the West, Meherji took them to a shop and bought watches for them. So he had some extra cash, so he could afford to buy some good watches. And he, being a businessman, could start bargaining there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was astonished how he could bargain in a Swiss watch shop, you know,
yeah.
Just like an Indian bargaining in a vegetable stall. And the man brought down prices considerably, you know.
Did he?
Yeah. And Meiji thinks that is a laurel in his cap.
I would have thought so, because my impression is that there's no bargain
at
all.
So that is how we had the impression. So he says, nothing of that. If you are not going to reduce prices, we'll go elsewhere. So that man said, okay, how many watches you want to buy, and so on. So he got for Gustadji a nice gold watch, which Gustadji took a fancy for. And it would show dates and time and all that. So it was a novelty at that time. So Gustadji would wear the watch when he was for his Western trip, you know. When he came back, he, of course, took out the watch with the other dress and all. and he hid it somewhere in his room, you know. His room was the little tiny room at the back here, you know. Besides Arnavaz's room, there's a small storeroom. That was Gustaji's room. And it was filled to the brim with trunks and boxes, and mostly it was all old papers and scraps of papers which he would pick up on the road.
And
then he would collect them and then send for selling to my sister. And she would have to sell them and buy sweets for Gustaji. So Baba had given him a latitude to do this. So Donkin was very naughty, you know. He purposely would smoke a cigarette or something, and when the empty carton would be there, he would drop it near Gustaji. Sure enough, as soon as Don would leave, he would go and pick it up, you know. So, and there would be scraps of paper you would throw around. Gustaji would go and collect them. And then he would straighten out all these things. Day long, this would be his activity. You know. External activity would be this, you know. Something like a must.
So you would see him around the compound, yeah, picking up this.
Not all the while, but whenever he happened to see anything, yeah, he'd pick it up. Then, or he would make stacks of these, and then at the end of a month or two, they would go to my sister's house, and she would have to sell them to a scrap merchant for a few annas.
That's all
he would get. And buy sweetmeats for Gustaji. He had a sweet tooth, you know. So he was strictly vegetarian. Yes, but he liked cheese, milk products and sweets. That was his forte. You know. So this watch was there, you know. So my stay, Baba tells Gustaji one day, "Gustaji, Mehrwan is here for so long. Have you showed him that watch?" So Gustaji says, "Shh," he tells Baba, "don't say this in front of all. I would like to show him, but then I don't want people to know this." So Baba looks around, yes.
Going.
"Now you go quietly. When there's nobody around, Gustaji will call you." He tells this to Gustaji in front of me. And you show him that watch. What a beautiful watch it is. So it even has an alarm, you know. So ask him to show you that. And Gustaji says, "Yes, Baba, I'll show you." Then after some time, Gustaji claps and he calls me in. So he says, "Come on in." So I get in. He closes the window. There's only one window there. It's all dark, and he puts on the light. He shuts the door, looks around, makes sure nobody is watching. Then he opens this trunk, and in a big box is, so there's a knock on the door, and Gustaji hides that thing again, shuts the trunk, opens the door, and it's Baba there. So he says, "Have you shown?" "No, Baba, I'm showing it to him." The Baba comes in. And then Gustaji brings out this watch, and Baba says, "See how beautiful it is, huh?" I said, "Baba, what a lovely watch it is." "Yes, it was a nice big gold watch." Then show him how the alarm goes off. And then Gustaji just moves the hands around, and the alarm starts to ring. And there's a nice alarm sound in it. So Baba says, "See how nice it is." And then after seeing that, then Gustaji says, "Now you all go, I have to pack this up and put it back so that nobody gets hold of it."
That seems to have been one of Gustaji's funny traits of being very possessive, as it were.
Yeah, but in a very childlike way. Yeah. So then he hid it somewhere, and that was the last time anybody probably would have seen that watch. And what happened is that when he died, Erat says that he sent for his brother Homi, I don't know,
Yeah.
Homi, was it?
I think it's Homi. Who had stayed with Baba in the early
Mehrabad, days. Yeah. Probably Homi or one of the other brothers. I think it was Homi. So he was called to take possession of Gustaji's belongings.
Mm.
So to take them away. So he came there and he started to open the trunks and he was throwing things out, you know. 90% of it was all scrap. And he was saying, junk, what is he calling me for this and all that? There was, of course, a few clothes of Gustaji, those Western clothes and all that. That was about all. Otherwise, it was all torn shreds and rags and all these things. Then he comes to Erich and says, I had heard that Gustaji had a gold watch, but I don't seem to find it anywhere. So any of you have taken it or something? He sort of asked in such a way that Erich was rather perturbed. He says, no, we never touch his things. It must be somewhere there. You better search properly, you know. So he said, I've searched all over. I can't find it anywhere. So Erich was a bit diffident because he might think that the Manli might be taking it and just not telling him. So he went there and he says, have you searched in all these things that you have thrown out? So he says, how could he put it in these things? He says, you never can tell with this man, he old man. He had these idiosyncrasies. You better check properly. So, but he says, I've checked everything. I can't find. So he starts scrummaging. And there was an old shoe that was thrown out, which was torn from all sides. So Erich fiddled with it, and it was all stuffed with paper, you know, to keep the shoe in shape. So he brought out all that stuffing, and sure enough, the watch was inside there. And Erich says, here's the watch, which you would have blamed us otherwise. So this was the story of that watch. Yeah.
So he has it now, presumably, if he's still alive.
I suppose.
Yeah.
So this was how Gustaji was.
What an interesting character. These people around Baba were such unusual.
Yeah. I remember the time for when we were that meeting of the declaration in Satara.
Mm.
And Gustaji tells Adi that when you go back, will you do one work for me? And Adi says, yes, what is it? I have some bundles of old newspapers. Would you just send this over to Meru? Meru was my sister. So would you give this over to her? I don't know whether it was in that meeting or some other, sometime that time. He was saying that you should take this to Nagar and sell it off. I think my sister had died then. So somebody else had to do this job of selling the newspapers. So he tells Adi. So Adi must have thought a couple of bundles of newspapers. So he says, of course, Gustaji, I will do it. And then he didn't know what he was asking, he was in for. And after the meeting, he goes to Gustaji's place and Gustaji starts bringing out these bundles, one bundle after the other. He had collected these for months, you know, and nobody had taken them. So there was a carrier on top of his car, so that had been fully loaded. And there were still bundles coming out. His whole back seat was loaded, the footrest. And suddenly Adi became very wild. He says, Gustaji, this is my car and not a truck. It's a new car I have. I don't like to load it like this. What's this, all this rubbish you're giving? And he began to throw out all the bundles, you know. It was all scattered in there, and Gustaji was poor chap looking. Baba happened to be coming by. And he says, what's all this going on? And Adi says, look, Baba, he told me to carry a few bundles. I agreed, and now he's loading my car like. So Baba says, no. You agreed to take what he was to give you, no?
Mm.
Yes, Baba. Now you pick up all this and load it back in your car and take it back. Now that you have told him, you must do it. So also Adi grudgingly starts loading, and when we went off in other cars, he was still loading his car. It was all full of all these junk newspapers and scraps. And Adi was swearing away, this old man, he'll ruin my car. Because the day I told him that I'll take his bundles.
All of this just for a few anna.
Yeah. Well, a few rupees probably. Yeah. Yeah, that didn't fetch much those days. So Gustaji is quite a character. But very sweet character. He wouldn't meddle with other people's affairs. Mm. He would keep to himself. And whenever Baba would go, he would give company to Baba.
Mm. I have the impression that Baba enjoyed his company very much.
Yeah. He was always had a very charming face, smiling, and plump cheeks, and quite rosy hair. Yeah. Like that of a small child. Very innocent.
It's interesting how Baba would have around him some Mandali who were very hard worked.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, there would be others who had no outward work at all.
Yeah.
Just
and that was most difficult to do, you know.
Yeah.
People who had no work, probably what work Baba must have given them internally.
Right.
But not to do physical activity in the midst of activity all around is a very tough proposition. If you should experience this to know the difficulty of this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. To obey Baba's order not to indulge in any activity and remain in whatever way he wants us to remain.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is part of his conditioning, you know.
Gustaji had this for quite a few years by this time.
In the old days, he was the manager and he was an extremely busy person. Managing the ashram affairs, yeah. And even the women's side and the men's side, both he had to look after. And then a sudden cut off activity. Yeah. So this is how Baba wears off one's mind, as it were.
Mm-hmm. How are you doing, Narayan? Do you want to keep going? Or
we haven't heard the sound of the bell, I think. We'll wait till it comes.
Anything more from this stay at Mirzayan?
As I said, this incident occurred, and Gustaji who blessed me, and then thereafter I was off this awful sort of thing that I was having.
Yeah. That was the end of that.
That was the end. And then I went back. I was sent back, and then Baba left for the West in 1956. And it was a very hectic tour.
It's a beautiful film of that, in fact, a lot of footage. That
Of course, Erich was sent to us for a few days before going to the West. And he had to do some shopping there for buying a few clothes and some suitcases or something to take along. So he was with us in Pune at that time. And then Baba left, of course, and after they returned from the Western trip, Erich came back to us, Meherji was there, and we got first-hand accounts of what transpired there. It was a wonderful trip they had. Yeah. So that was 1956, I think.
Yeah.
And after returning from the Western tour, Baba was again in very strict seclusion back at Satara. And Erich tells us of those days when Baba would take these whirlwind trips, as it were, in the car.
Must tours,
yes. And Baba one day asked Iraj to drive him all the way up to Indore, which is about 700-800 miles to the north, I think, in the car.
And whose car at this point?
It was Nariman's car. Mm. Yeah. So then after going there, Baba says, I have to reach back to Satara within 24 hours or something, or 30 hours or something. Can you make it? Mm. And there it says, I will try, Baba. Mm. And then here it says they had to do this non-stop driving. For 3 nights he hadn't slept, going and coming back. Mm. And he said at the end of that trip, towards the end he was feeling as if the car was not in his control, and as if Baba was in charge of the steering wheel, as it were. He gives us a vivid account of how totally exhausted he was, mentally and physically. And at one time he felt as if he would like to end this whole misery and give a jerk to the steering wheel and finish it off. So after the journey was over, he tells Baba, hereafter I will not drive again. So he says, what's wrong? Baba, no, I feel very, very insecure. Something could happen. I can't concentrate like this. And Baba says, you're crazy. And he says, I felt so desperate at one time, like something could have happened. Baba says, nothing to worry, and this and that. And that's how he just kept on going, you know, and made Iraj keep on doing these trips one after the other. So eventually we come to the end of the year, and Baba suddenly tells Iraj, today I would like to go to Pune. There's a nice match to be held there. So they must have read in the papers or something. So let's go and
cricket match.
Yeah. So, and today we will not eat anything or drink anything. But when the women give the food, don't tell them that this is the order. Just take what they give. So the Niraj says he took the food and all that given by the women, and they hadn't eaten anything that day since the morning. Neither Baba had. He must have avoided in some way or the other. And they came to Pune. So they came to Pune, and Baba says, let's go to the defense academy. There's a big defense academy in Pune, near Khadakwasla, about 10 miles from Pune. It's a big military establishment where they train the military cadets. It's a huge, big, sprawling structure and very modern and up-to-date for military studies for the cadets. So Baba went there, he just took a round and then came back and then this match was there. So Baba had the car driven to an obscure corner and came out and sat under a tree and started seeing this match. And seeing the car there, Gadikar, one of Baba's disciples, and I think Ramakrishna, they were there, they happened to be there. And they saw this car and they said, oh, Baba's car, Baba must be around somewhere. So they rushed near the car. And it was Baba's order that nobody should approach him. He was in seclusion, you know. So they came near and they saw Baba, and Baba saw them. And Baba was extremely upset. And then Baba calls Gadikar and says, you have broken my order. Didn't I tell you that you shouldn't try to see me? when I give you my order and you break it, this is the sign, he said. I'm very displeased with you. Go, I don't want to see your face again. And so saying, he just shooed off Gadekar, you know. And Gadekar also was very upset about it. And of course, he went away. And Baba says, now my mood is spoiled. Let's return. So Baba gets into the car, and they are wending their way back. As they are approaching the outskirts of Pune's city, there is this main thoroughfare which has been blocked by the police. And there's all this traffic blocked. So Baba asks to find out. And the police man on duty says, Chawanla is to pass by this way, so all traffic has been closed.
That's the, whatever, the Prime Minister of China or whatever.
Yes, this was just before the Chinese invasion, I think, took place. So, much before, of course. This is a time when the Chinese were pretending to be great friends of India, you know, and externally fooling Prime Minister Nehru, and at the same time making preparations for wholesale invasion of the Indian border. So this man was coming, and their car was blocked there. And Nilu says, Baba, could I go out and see this man passing by? Baba was upset. He said, what do you want to see this man for? What's there to see in him? Oh, Baba, I'd just like to see this man. All right, you want to go and see. He wasn't very happy about that. And then this fellow passed by the cavalcade, and then the traffic opened and the car was out of the jam, and they headed for Satara. And the Haji. Okay, so. So I'll just finish this incident. And as they were approaching Uttara, as I said, where we had this cricket match, this accident took place. The personal disaster that Baba had predicted several months ago at Mehrazad, it happened. It was the 2nd of December in 1956. It was a very dull day. It was all very cloudy and overcast, I remember. And it wasn't a pleasant day at all. It was cold and it had rained a little. And in the evening, this accident took place. And of course, we didn't know anything about it until the next day, when the telegram came and Mehrji came and told us that I'm rushing off to Satara. This has happened. Dr. Nilu has died. Others are in, have serious injuries. Baba is injured. So I'm going there. He was going to do night watch, to help doing night watch for Baba. So we'll continue after.
Jai Baba.
Jai Baba.
This is continuing on July 27th, resuming from this morning's session again. I'm with Mirwan Jaisawala, and this morning, Mirwan, you had been talking about the episodes leading up to Baba's second accident. Near Satara, and the first news of that accident itself.
Yes, so during the interval, I remembered a very funny little incident. So before we go on to this very somber and very heartbreaking incident of the second accident, I would like to tell you one very humorous incident that occurred. While I was at Mehrazad with Baba for that month, In June 1956, I think it was, just before Baba left for the West. So the rest of the Mandali were at Satara, as I said, and Pendu was in charge. So one day we received a big, long letter from Pendu. And Iraj was reading correspondence to Baba. Of course, all the other activities of making preparations and messages, correspondence to the West and all this, and this correspondence also from India and the East. Everything was going on simultaneously. Very hectic time. So this big long letter from Pendu comes, and after Iraj read it, then he says to Baba, "Baba, I've received a very funny letter from Pendu." So Baba says, "Let's hear it." So Pendu writes to Baba that to the effect that, "Dear Baba, I hope you and the rest of the Mandali are having a very peaceful time at Mehrazad, and you have left me in charge here of a semi-lunatics, I think," or something to that effect. And I have not a moment's peace here. It's getting on my nerves, and it has come to a point where I must let you know something, although it's so humorous that you'll also enjoy what has happened." And then he goes on to describe. You see, Don had very recently finished his epic work of the Wayfarers. And of course, he had undergone tremendous hardships to compile that monumental work. And it was a superb effort on his part, because not knowing the... You missed something?
Just a few seconds before that. So
as I was saying, Donkin had just completed his monumental work, The Wayfarers, and he had undergone great hardships and tremendous amount of physical and mental suffering, I should say, to compile that wonderful book. He was handicapped with the language, the customs, and the greatest disadvantage was that long time had elapsed since the incidents were the incidents which he wanted to record had occurred long time back. So he had to rely solely on the memories of the Mandali who accompanied Baba on these fantastic must tours. And he was such a meticulous person, so he would check, recheck, countercheck. He would ask this Mandali, that Mandali. If there were contradictions, he would sit together and try to sort out what was it, try to make them recollect again. And the Mandali would not be in the mood. As you know, Baba's hectic activities would always be there. So in the midst, in the face of tremendous odds, and I'm sure it was Baba's grace that he just was able to do this. And it was his own sudden whim when he mentioned before Baba some must tour incidents were being recounted, and he exclaimed there in front of Baba, "Baba, all this really should be recorded." And Baba says, "Why don't you do that?" And he got trapped, you know. So it's all very... very spontaneous with Baba, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
and he was certainly the man to do it.
Yeah,
fruit of his labor.
It was a tremendous feat on his part, and what a book he has brought out for posterity. So, compiling this book, he had really become half crazy. I tell you, he had become like a must, so to say. So. He would behave rather odd. When he would talk with a person, he would keep on talking, or He would suddenly feel very annoyed with noise and shut himself up for days. So his behavior had become very, very erratic and problematic, you know. So Sandhu then writes in this letter that you know how Don is behaving these days. And now he's come to almost a climax, you know. The other day he started to talk to me early in the morning. So I heard him for an hour, another hour. It was time for lunch, so we sat for lunch. He kept on talking to me. Non-stop he kept on talking. Then it was time for tea. Still he went on and on and on. Until it was time to go to sleep, and yet Don was continuously talking, and he said I was almost getting crazy about it. The next day, Pandu tried to avoid him, but again he caught on to him. So Pandu writes that fortunately, Aloba happened to be around me, and it was Don's ill luck that he happened to mention the Shah of Iran. No sooner Aloba heard the word Shah of Iran, Aloba took over. So Aloba said, wait a minute, I have to tell you something, Don, something very interesting. And he started, all the very history of Iran started to come out from Aloba. So Pandu was greatly relieved because Aloba was now latched on to Donkin. So Aloba kept on talking and talking and talking non-stop. So then Don began to get a little nervous that is he going to stop or not? And so Don retreated to the toilet. So Aloba followed him to the toilet. And from the from outside he was shouting his story, continuing with the story of Iran. You know? So eventually Don suddenly opened the toilet door and rushed to his room. And Aloba in hot pursuit, Pandu writes, talking about Iran and other things. And then Don fleeing to his room and bolting the door with a loud bang and locking himself in. And Aloba banging the doors from outside and say, listen to this last thing, it's really interesting. But Don wouldn't open the door and he started to shout